So, that said, a huge, the foundation of Buddhist wisdom, the Buddhist practice itself, is really rests on the concentration practice. And by concentration, I mean the way we focus the mind. There's really nothing in the entire Buddhist spiritual practice that's accomplished by allowing the mind to be scattered and roam wherever it wants and be diffuse. The foundations of acquiring wisdom are built on learning how to keep the mind restrained within a certain area of inquiry and learning how to block out or at least allow everything else to remain in the background. So we have a foreground and a background. Most people, unfortunately, when they meditate, have a very... it's like sort of like that party concentration. You ever know when you talk to somebody at a party and they're sort of talking to you, but they're looking over your shoulder and like maybe there's somebody cooler, sexier, you know? I'm talking to this bald Buddhist guy, and that's okay, but there might be somebody else here. So, and that's the problem is that we bring that same kind of attention that we bring to the rest of our life into our meditation, we really don't learn very much. Because that kind of attention is so scattered that we don't really see how we're causing ourselves stress and suffering. You got to really stay a little bit more glued to what you're doing to see what thoughts and what actions are bringing yourself tranquility and which thoughts and which actions are not. So imagine if you're at a party and, oh, I don't know, Tom Waits walked up to you. You probably wouldn't be looking all around like wondering if there was something cooler, you probably be, oh, this is pretty cool. Fucking Tom Waits. He's talking to me. And this guy, you know, he makes pretty good music, so I'm sort of interested in what he has to say. I might learn something. If you have the same kind of interest in what you're focusing on, we actually can acquire a great deal of wisdom from observing the mind, observing how the mind gets in trouble, and observing what thoughts and actions make us happier. So that's what I mean by concentration. Another part of concentration is taking things that are very complex and compounded and large and breaking them down into their constituent parts and focusing on one part at a time. For example, if you know somebody who says they're an angry person, the thought or the statement, I'm an angry person, doesn't really help. It doesn't give a lot of insight. It's a generalization. But if you break it down, well, what parts of your body, when you get angry? What situations make you angry? What kinds of thoughts do you have when you're angry? How can you work with these thoughts? What kind of gut feelings are triggered in certain situations that you then respond to with anger? If we break it down into the core components, and then the body, the gut feelings, the thoughts, etc., one by one, then we can learn something. So concentration is about focusing the mind, putting other things aside, and breaking down complex things into smaller entities that we can work with. So I'm going to talk today about something that I've been working with a bit these days, and I think it's an important subject. Most of the time in our meditations, we get to choose what we focus on. We could focus on the breath or relaxing the body or having thoughts of goodwill. There's reflections on gratitude, all the things we're grateful for, the appreciation for things that other people have done for us. We can reflect on the virtuous things we've done, the times we've helped people and helped ourselves. These are all reflections that the Buddha said we can choose that are very, very skillful. But there's sometimes in life where we don't get to choose what our meditations are about. For instance, if we suffer a great loss, if somebody we care for dies or moves away, or if we have a brush with mortality, very often we wind up having to have a death reflection meditation. It's just we won't really be able to focus on anything else. Other times in life, especially when you get ancient like myself, there are things that are unknown to you youngsters called pain, pain in the body. And that's tonight's topic. Over the years, when we're young, we tend to not experience for a long while the body as an aging thing that has pains and changes beyond our control. And certainly a lot of our endeavors are to keep it that way through exercise and yoga, very skillful practices. But eventually, no matter what we do, we will have pain. It's inevitable. It is inevitable. It's one of the Buddha's first noble truths teachings. There will be pain. There will be not getting what we want in life. There will be loss. There will be disappointments. There will be sadness, grief. There will be winding up with things we don't want. There will be general frustrations. Pain is not personal. Everybody gets it. So pain as a meditation object is extremely important. And it's extremely challenging. On the one hand, there's nothing that we can learn about or gain any wisdom by pushing away. You know, there's, you know, parents that have unwanted children and they sort of push them away, hide them, and they think that's a way to deal with them, and those children wind up being drug addicts, and hopefully they find their way to Dharma puns. But, you know, with this idea that if there's something unpleasant in our lives, if we just push it away, that will get rid of it. And that's actually not generally a strategy that works. In order to gain any wisdom and gain any ability to lessen chronic or acute pain, we have to be able to focus on it, to face it, to work with it, to not push it away. It's, of course, very challenging. The mind doesn't like to look in the body in the first place. The mind rewards itself with all its dopamine for keeping track of what's going on around us in the world, looking for opportunities for sex and food, and looking for threats. That's what the bulk of our neurotransmitters and neuromodulators and whatnot are distributed for. They're distributed to keep us aware of what's going on around us. The mind feels generally pretty vulnerable looking inwards, and then when you add on top of it pain, well, the mind really then doesn't like staying within. It tends to look outside of itself for any kind of immediate magic bullet to make it go away, or some kind of distraction, or it will try to push it away. And most of the times, these strategies don't work. So I'm going to talk about some strategies that do work tonight when it comes to working with pain, both in meditation and not. Of course, don't come away with any idea that I'm urging you, if you've got chronic pain or any kind of pain, not to avail yourself of appropriate painkillers or anything that's been diagnosed and has been prescribed by a doctor. That's not what tonight's about. It's simply talking about how we can use this practice in addition, or just work with pain that arises, that are the inevitable pains in life. So, the first thing the Buddha taught is that when it comes to step one, is in life, when somebody says something insulting or mean-spirited, or, you know, that makes us feel bad, the Buddha calls that being shot with an arrow. And then he says what we tend to do is shoot ourselves over and over and over again by thinking about it over and over and over again. So we get shot once from outside. Somebody says, you know what, I don't like what you did, or whatever. They're insulting you, whatever. And that's the first arrow. But then we add in all the, why am I always being picked on? Why am I always the victim? I work hard. I don't need to put up with this shit. Why did I choose this person as a roommate? Oh, my God, I have terrible friends. So we're just shooting ourselves with arrows, the Buddha called that. And part of the thing is to learn what's the real inevitable arrow and what are the additional sufferings that we are shooting ourselves with. In other words, there's pain that's inevitable and there's suffering which is optional. So when it comes to working with pain, the first thing to do is find out or focus on, at first, the real sensations and learn to separate all the thoughts about the pain and learn to, with our focusing, put those aside. When we experience pain, the Buddha said there's this inevitable tendency to respond, he said, with confusion first, which means, in other words, we think, why me? Why is this happening to me? I'll tell you why. Because you're born into a human body, you're going to feel pain. That's why. As a famous Buddhist monk said, when we feel pain, it doesn't mean there's something wrong. It means there's something right. Because when you study the body, it's pretty amazing that we get to live for any length at all. There's so many interlocking systems that have to be working just perfectly. And if you're this level gets too high, or that level gets too high, or, you know, you start getting too much pH this, or whatever, you can tell how much I know about medicine, but you're going to die. So, or you'll get very sick. So it's amazing that, you know, things last as long as they do. There's nothing wrong when we experience pain. It's just the inevitability of having a body. So the first thing we're going to do is take it personally. And the Buddha said, reflect on the fact that this is transpersonal. This is what happens. It's what it means to be born as a human being. You're going to experience pain. And the second thing is, don't project, which is think about how bad it will become, how much worse it could get, what it could possibly mean. Run to, like I tend to do, the internet is there with all the possible rare diseases from Africa that you can misdiagnose yourself from. These are not good practices. Stay with the physical sensation in your meditation when you're mindful, and put aside all the thoughts. That means the thoughts about the future, the past, etc. So as we go into the thoughts, as I've studied with some wonderful monks, they say the next thing to do is to break apart the pain and to throw away the concept of pain itself and go into the actual sensations and start to see really how the pain is gaining your attention. Pain is actually it's actually really created by the brain, actually. None of the pain you experience in the body is actually in the body. It's really recreated in the brain, but it certainly feels like it's in the leg. But the thing is to go into wherever we locate the pain and to notice, is it throbbing? Or is it static? Is it moving? Or is it staying in one place? Is it diffuse over a large area? Or is it really compact into one area? Start to really look at it, not push it away, not wish it wasn't there, but just study it. When you do this, you will notice some amazing things. First of all, when we let go of the idea of pain and we instead just go into the actual sensations, miraculously enough, it starts to hurt a lot less. Because just the idea of labeling it pain, or labeling it, oh no, what the fuck is happening to me, or oh no, I'm going to be sitting here during my meditation for half an hour with leg pain or whatever, instead of thinking that, actually going into the sensations tends to strip it away of all the excess layers that we add on, and it tends to just limit it to the actual sensations themselves, which are rarely as bad as they feel when we're pushing them away. There's something profound about greeting pain then, and the way it changes it to the what happens when we run away or push it away. This kind of changing the attention, the way we attend to pain, has a profound way of dealing or changing the experience. Now, some of you aren't in any pain, and you want to metaphorically exchange the ideas of heartache or frustration or sadness. You can do that, because all of these techniques I'm talking about work in the same way. Pain is just a great analogy of how to work with the rest of the sensations of life. So we look into it, and instead of lumping it all into one concept of I'm in pain, we put aside that label and we really study the sensations. Once we do, the Buddha and monks I've studied with have got some really wonderful tools that really additionally will lessen the pain. The first is, we tend to focus on pain when it arises, and then we tend to lessen our interest when it fades away, and we tend to move on to other things to focus on. For example, if I've got a pain in my shoulder, when it starts up again, I'll put all my attention into my shoulder. I'll go, oh, my shoulder's in pain again. And then there's throwing all those emotions and all those feelings at the pain. But if we at least not only focus on it when it arises, but keep our awareness on this area as the pain eventually recedes and passes, and keep even focusing on it then afterwards until it's completely gone, something very powerful happens, which is we experience not only that pain arises, but we experience that pain passes. Now you might say, oh my goodness, that's dumb. I know that. I know that pain passes. Guess what? Even though you know something intellectually, it might not help you at all. I could tell you that life is short and you should, whatever, live every day in the fullest. You go, yeah, I know that. And then most people go on living without, in any way, shape, or form, actually experiencing and living that knowledge. Then one day when they experience a loss, somebody they're close to dies, then, oh my God, life is short, I gotta smell the coffee or whatever, I gotta, you know, oh my God, why didn't anybody tell me this, you know, if life is fleeting. You know, it's the same thing. If you just say to yourself, oh, I know that pain passes, but you don't experience it, you don't focus on the pain, stay with it until it passes, and you really experience it, when pain arises, you'll think, oh my God, it's pain, it's never going to go away, because you haven't allowed yourself to experience pain ceasing. But once you've stayed long enough with pain as it passes, stay focusing on the same area well into the point where there's no longer any uncomfortable sensations, your mind has experienced it, and you've lived the fact that pain arises and it passes. And that transforms then the way you experience pain when it arises. It's a lot different knowing intellectually that pain will pass than it is knowing experientially. It's a little bit like when you're riding a bike. Most people, when they're riding up a tough bridge, just focus on the leg that's pushing down, then the next leg that's pushing down, then the next leg that's pushing down. You can actually focus on the leg that's moving up, where there's no energy, just as much as you can focus on the leg that's pushing down. Or you can just follow one leg, up and down, up and down, so you realize that whatever pain is in the leg as it goes down will pass as it moves up. It's the same thing, keeping your awareness, allowing the pain to fully arise and pass, brings it into the heart, this deep one knowledge and experience, that pain is fleeting most of the time. There are, of course, some pains that last for long periods of time, but most of the pains in life come and go, come and go, come and go. And that's an important thing to experience. The next thing is to change the way we greet pain. As I was hinting at earlier, instead of the normal emotional, oh no, I'm feeling that throbbing sensation, that painful sensation, that pinprick sensation, instead to simply have a greeting for it. Sounds really awkward, but I've worked with a lot of different pain in my body, and if you just say, okay, here it is again, welcome, I'm going to have to work with you again, just changing the way we relate to it from panic, fear, resentment, pushing away, running away, to a sense of, okay, this is an opportunity for me to learn. This is an opportunity for me to practice. Just that change actually transforms the amount of pain we experience. Because the pain itself, which is trying to get our attention, knows it doesn't have to sound the alarm bells as loudly. It knows that we're there. It knows that we're not pushing it away. The C4 nerves, whatever they are, I really don't know enough about the neurobiology of pain. But believe me, when we grieve pain rather than pushing it or running away from it, it doesn't feel as painful. Now, another technique that's talked about in many of the practices is when you've located the pain, to find an area just above it and just below it, and to, with each breath, with each in-breath, move the awareness from the comfortable place through the pain to the area above it that feels comfortable. And then with the out-breath, move the awareness down through the discomfort to the area that feels good again. So you've created two areas that feel good right above and below the pain, and you're moving the breath energy through it. Eventually, this tends to give the mind a comfortable way to move in and out of the pain and to be with it without it being too overwhelming. Other monks I've studied with have talked a lot about switching on and off, finding an area of the body that feels comfortable, for example, the palms of your hands. Spend some time in the palm of your hand where it's comfortable, and then go back into the area that feels uncomfortable, and switch back and forth for 2 or 3 minutes, so that while you're observing the pain, you know that there'll be a time when you'll switch off, and vice versa. These are some techniques. Now, eventually, as we move further and further away from just the body-based practices, there's two other techniques I'd like to tell you before we finish. The next is to discover, when we're in the body, how our gut reacts to pain. In other words, we all have an area of the body where we hold our gut feelings. How you know when you're happy or you're upset, when you're angry or you're not. There's an area in our bodies that registers our emotions. This is the seat of Vedana. It's when neuroscientists talk about it, like Antonio Damasio, there's just areas in the body that the insula reads to let us know when we're uncomfortable with something and when we're comfortable with something. So start to find that area of the body that clenches when you're in pain. For example, when I have jaw pain, I have quite a bit of it sometimes, I notice that my stomach, which is where I hold most of my emotions, gets very tight. It's very tight, and my shoulders sometimes will get tight. So what I'll do is when I start to feel these, I've worked with a bit of the pain, I'll go and I'll relax the stomach and I'll relax my shoulders. So the rest of the body where I hold my feelings is relaxed so that I'm not adding all this additional gut anger or angst or feelings trying to push away the pain. The less the body is uncomfortable. In other words, I've relaxed my stomach, I've relaxed my shoulders, and it's just the jaw, the more I can work with the sensations that are actually in pain, and I'll have a chance to work with them, and I'll have a chance to be with it without being overwhelmed. When a lot of the different areas of the body are tense and contracted and uncomfortable, it becomes very, very difficult to sit and work with pain. Finally, in the mind, once we've spent a lot of time working in the body with the pain, it becomes appropriate to notice what kinds of thoughts that we greet or that we have when we're in pain, and to purposely practice changing the thoughts that will not add, generally to the discomfort. Generally, when we are in pain, the brain tends to send out flare messages. You know, the amygdala is triggered, cortisol is rampant, and the thoughts are, oh no, I'm going to die unless I get help. My leg's going to fall off during this meditation. I'm going to be a one-legged person who, the first person who ever had an amputation from meditation. That would be me. The potassium levels in my leg are unacceptably high. I'm going to, when I move, I'm going to have a heart attack, whatever. So the trigger is to find those thoughts and to purposely change them to thoughts of goodwill. Thoughts of wishing the area of the body that's in pain goodwill. Thoughts of wishing yourself goodwill. Changing the way you relate to the thoughts. If you notice that when you're in pain, your mind contracts around one little area or gets very small around the thoughts and just the pain, keep the mind spacious when you're working with the mind so that you're not only collapsing around the thoughts, but you're also feeling all the other sensations and aware of other possible stimuli and sensations. That's at the end of the working with the practice, is to keep the mind open and spacious, not to allow the mind to contract around fear-driven thoughts. And to as many times as possible, reflect on not only thoughts of goodwill, but reflect on the fact that you've experienced that this pain will pass, that you haven't always been in pain, that you won't always be in pain. Just these types of techniques I have found are extremely helpful. I have the experience, I've talked about this before, of when a couple years ago, without any painkillers, I wound up at night passing a large kidney stone, and which is one of the more unbearable experiences you could possibly imagine. And I was lucky to have all of these techniques available to me. It was the only way I got through it. But they really worked. They made a situation that is supposed to be the most, you know, and was pretty fucking unbearable, but it made it so that I actually got through it and I didn't wind up scarred or emotionally damaged by the whole experience. It actually was quite a learning experience, really seeing that these techniques do work. So I thought I'd share with you that tonight, and next week we'll have a completely different talk. I hope you got something out of it, and now's your time to share anything that you'd like to share or ask any questions about the spiritual practice in tonight's talk. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I just wanted to share something that I've used with